Yeah, man, it's going down. It's Donnie Houston Podcast. I am Donnie Houston. Check it out, man. We got a special guest, man. You know what I'm saying? Representing Dallas, man. I really mess with this boy music, man. I'm talking about, I remember, like, you know, when them late 2000s coming, man, to Dallas, had that run going. They had the boogie movement and all that coming, man. Then they had this Cat the Road coming, man. And he had so many records going. She walked and walked, you know what I'm saying? Halle Berry, you know what I'm saying? Ice Cream Paint Job, man, you know what I'm saying? Get Big. The boy was just going crazy, man. You know what I'm saying? He in the H, you know what I'm saying? Came through the kicker, man. What's going down?
What's up with it, man? I'm out here, you know what I'm saying? On some Triple D H-Town shit right now,
For sure. Really. You say you was out here, you know, so you got some new music you was shooting at.
Yeah. I was shooting a video today, you know. We shot the H-Town scene to my new single, Still, you know, it's a follow-up from my last single featuring Sauce Walker, Hit a Lick. You know, they both going on my Star Baby album coming out at the top of 2023. So, you know, we shot the H-Town scene to that today. So, you know, came out here for that. Just rocking ever since.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up. So what else you been having going on, man?
Shit, man, a lot, man. A lot of music. Recording a lot of new music. Man, everywhere. Doing stuff with the Dallas Cowboys, the Dallas Mavericks, you know what I'm saying? I got a halftime show coming up this weekend for the Mavericks. Man, just really just working, you feel me? Like, working on the music, getting ready to put out a whole bunch of new music. That's really it, just focusing on that.
I know at one point I see you talking about being out in Cali a lot. Are you more like Dallas-based now?
I'm always Dallas-based, but, you know, even you know, I was going back and forth, you know. My spot in L.A., Dallas, going back, recording, working, you know what I'm saying? Just catching new vibes out there, you know what I'm talking about? Texifornia, that's the movement, I call it, you know, when I'm on that type of wave, you know, my Texifornia movement. Dallas, L.A., the Bay, Houston, like, it was a point of time where, like, the whole year I was making them four cities just running, you know what I'm saying? I go to Dallas, go to Houston, go to L.A., go from L.A. to the Bay, back to Texas, back to Cali, back. So I came up with this concept and movement called Texifornia, you feel me? Actually got a project and a song out called Texifornia, and then a project on the way called Texifornia, you know what I'm saying, in the future, you feel me? Not after the Star Baby album, you go, so, yeah.
Man, okay, so you got Texas artists, California artists on there, or is it just more the sound?
Yeah, it's the sound and artists, like, you know, on the stuff that I've been doing for the Texas For You project, it's my Texas producers and my Cali producers, you know what I'm saying? And if I am collabing, it's Texas artists and Cali artists, you know what I'm saying? And that make the Texas For You movement and the Texas For You sound.
Yeah. That's what's up, man. Well, tell me this, because like I say, I remember it was just like a splash when you like came, you know what I'm saying? And I remember like people telling me, yeah, you know, well, he was at PV, he had his thing going at PV and all that. But like, tell me like back like in Dallas, you know what I'm saying? Like coming up, like early got into music. And I would imagine, you know what I'm saying? Because you were a taller dude, you was into sports and all that type of shit too. So like,
yeah.
It's just like take me through like, you know what I'm saying, coming up in Dallas and all that.
Coming up in Dallas, man, you know, I came up playing ball, you know what I'm saying? I was a hooper in high school, you know, I also rapped in high school, you know.
That's when
saying?
You got into it in high school?
Yeah, music, yeah, that's when I got into actually recording and putting music out and, you know what I'm saying, really like going for it, you know what I'm saying, in high school, you know, I played ball, I was popping with the basketball shit, you know, on some, like, captain of the b-ball squad type stuff, you know, running out to the music as well, you know. After I graduated, I went to Prairie View, you know what I'm saying?
But even before then, like, what was you listening to? How big of an influence did, like, Houston have, like, on your rap thing?
Well,
or was it more Dallas? Or, like, who was, like, influencing?
Well, Houston was the first, like, Lil Flip, for instance, was probably, like, the first rapper to influence me to get into the whole wave of Texas music, listening to it, the culture, all that type shit, you know what I'm saying? And I wasn't even in junior high when I was like in the sixth grade when I discovered Lil Flip, you know what I'm saying?
It was, and like, I can do that now, that,
yeah,
type of stuff?
Yeah, This Way We Ball. Before that, the mixtapes.
You was getting
the
underground stuff,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, I was getting before them singles. So, my big bro, man, was in high school listening to Lil Flip, and I just used to listen to what they would listen to. But this was before all that, This The Way We Ball, and I Can Do That. So when he was just dropping the mixtapes, you know what I'm saying, in the freestyles, And then he got mainstream and started doing that. So that's when I was coming. I mean, obviously, you know, I listened to UGK because of, like, people that was older around me and Big Brother and stuff. But I really wasn't engulfed in that movement, so I got older. But, like, the first Texas artist that really got me into Texas shit and culture was Lil Flip. And then that went from Lil Flip to Swisher House movement. By the time I got in high school, it was the Swisher House movement. Mike Jones, all that stuff, Power Wall, Millionaire Slim. When that wave came, that sparked the DSR movement in Dallas. And that DSR was the group that made me jump off the porch and start rapping because, you know, a couple of people that was in DSR, you know, I was still around in the city. We was actually from the same hoods type shit. They was older, but I seen them. So, you know, it's just something about, especially when you're young, seeing motherfuckers in your back porch, you know, really doing some stuff that influenced you more to be like, okay, I can really do this shit, or, you know, I want to do it and I can actually do it, versus just seeing stuff on hearing stuff on the radio, mm-hmm. and seeing it on TV versus seeing it in real life. So I would say it was a combination of those things. But once it got to the DSR movement, I was in high school, and that's when I was just like, shit, I'm gonna do it, you feel me? And I jumped off the porch, started doing mixtapes in high school. Quickly got like a buzz, you know, at least around in my area, you feel me? And then it went one thing to another. Once I got the PV, that's when I really made the rap shit happen.
So what happened with basketball?
So basketball, you know, I had scholarship. I was gonna take the scholarship down to St. Mary's in San Antonio. Really wasn't feeling the school when I got there. I went to PV, was feeling the school for just the environment. But see, by the time I graduated high school, I was caught in that crossroad because I was already like, I was becoming pretty popular for my music. You feel me? Like, I wasn't getting shows yet, but I was selling mixtapes.
You had songs and shit? Yeah,
I had mixtapes. I had mixtapes, like, yeah, my mixtape started off me rapping on other beats, but this is the era where you burning CDs and you can sell them CDs if you got people to sell them to. And like, I was selling CDs at school, so that was the first time I was getting money on my own independently. Like, from so that influenced, that changed my mind about, like, so the way I looked at sports and basketball, I mean, you got to go through the right pipeline. It's a lot of politics with basketball. You know, you can't get hurt. You need to go through the right system. You got to go through the right coaching. It's a lot of unpredictable things that can, you know, alter your, you know what I'm saying, where you trying to go. But with rap, you can take, the way I saw it, I can take full control on this. I can go record a mixtape right now.
Put it out when you want
to put it out right now and actually go straight to fans and sell it, get direct. So that, I just couldn't get over that. You know,
selling them with like $5,
$10, $10. I, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I would drop a mixtape and first day of school, come home with a few hundred dollars, $300, you know what I'm saying? $200-$300 in high school from making no money, you know what I'm saying? I was just like, what if I expand it out? Like, I feel like I can make more money like this. And I was also, you know what I'm saying, in love with making the music. So I kind of just chose music over sports. It just felt like I had more control over it. You get what I'm saying? And then when I got the PV shit, I instantly hit the ground running. You know, I saw a big ass market and I just hit the campus. I quickly developed a fan base, a real fan base, same thing, selling mixtapes. Now I'm starting to, you know, get little shows around.
Are you still doing other beats or you got songs?
Even at PV, when I first came in, I was still rapping on other beats. I didn't get my first beat. I was at PV when I found my first producer, dude named King Blue. Shout out to George Young, who out here in the H and from
That's
the
my
H.
Boy. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, George Young. That was like the first people was giving me real beats. You get what I'm saying? Like, when I started getting real beats from like him and Blue, that's where I got all my beats from. Then that's when I started taking my mixtapes to the next level, like investing into like real replication. Like, I just started, you know what I'm saying, seeing myself as an official rapper. Got with a DJ down there, PV, shot the Merc and Mr. Rogers, and we were dropping these mixtapes, and I was just doing my thing like that, and it was just growing. And from then on,
can you talk about PV a little bit? Because it's something about PV, like, it's like a culture down there of like, you got you, Kirko, a few people that come down
there
and really come up like the PV. Like, you really
man, it was when I got down there, bro, like as soon as I got down there from freshman orientation, I just saw what it was. It was a party school right off the back, and I was just like, this it right here. Like, this a gold mine. Like, it's so many people from everywhere in Texas and even beyond. It's like, it's no way. Because in my mind, I was like, if I got popping back in my hometown back in Dallas, and all I had was just the access to people right there, I'm like, imagine what I can do right here. And I did that. And PV was just, you know, I was kind of the one to kind of kick off that whole movement. You know what I'm saying? That PV, I was actually, as far as some rap shit, you know what I'm saying? I would make a lot of mixtapes. I would connect with the two DJs that was out there. DJ Miracle was my DJ, and then Mr. Rogers. Get my song, start playing at parties, playing at Hump Day. Before you know, after the first semester, my name circulating around PV. And
What songs you getting going at this time?
So this year, I had a song, my freshman year, I had a mixtape called, two mixtape. I came in with this mixtape called Duke of Hazzard and another mixtape called Cold Red. And those mixtapes was just, everybody was jamming those mixtapes. But then I got with DJ Merck and we started dropping mixtape series. He was dropping real mixtape series like Hustle Factor, Outbreak. He had these different mixtape series, and he was keeping them. He was at least dropping once a month, you know what I'm talking about? And I was all over those mixtapes. So between my solo mixtapes and all those mixtapes, we was the only ones flooding PV like that. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, pretty soon we walking around campus and you can hear cars passing by, playing the music. We was pressing the CDs up for real, officially, putting our money into it, making it look legit. Handing them out, you know what I'm saying? You know, having girls hand them out. So we had like a real movement, and it stood out because I was the only person doing it at the time. You know what I'm saying? I started the Primetime Click, so we just had our own movement. Then, you know what I'm saying, that turned into, you know, by the time I got
Primetime Click, was like you and partners, or it was other
rappers? Yeah, that was me and my homies. That was me and my homies. That was like me and literally my homies that I met at PV. You know what I'm saying? Some was from Houston, some from Dallas. We was a Houston Dallas clique. You know what I'm saying? And that was another thing that made us popping, because when I got to PV, Dallas and Houston was beefed out. It was opposite sides. So we was the only ones walking around the the campus with a clique, and it's Dallas niggas and H-Town niggas. Hmm. So we spread out for it, because H-Town niggas who I had in the clique was popping amongst the H-Town people, and I and the other Dallas, we was popping amongst the Dallas people. So we had the whole thing, and by when people found out we was fucking with each other, that was another thing that stood out, like nobody had saw that. And so we just kind of had
that was a big deal, man. That Houston Dallas shit used to be
something. Oh yeah, it used to be a real thing, fam. You know what I'm saying? But and then that was right when the Dallas Boogie era was happening, and we was the one bringing that shit to PV, because obviously I was from Dallas, and that just turned into a whole different thing. So
you already tapping in with like Lil Will and like the guy B Hamp, these guys that already had,
yeah, so they was in Dallas, and I was from Dallas at PV. I had started my own wave, and then while I was down there, Lil Will and everybody started spreading out, and we started meeting. We actually, a lot of us even met at PV, because it was big shows that people was doing and bringing them to PV, and we met. And then we'll go back to Dallas and kick it, and then we started, you know what I'm saying, fucking with each other from there. And then it just kind of turned into that, bro. And then after that is when, you know, we did the Holly Berry and the Walk That Walk, you know what I'm saying? That started coming later. You know what I'm saying? Then that's after that, you know, that's when you had Bone Them out there, you know, with the homegirl. You had Superstar, yeah. You had Party Boys, you know what I'm saying? Kirkle came a little later, you know, like a year later after that. So it was just this whole wave.
How early do y'all do the Hattie Berry and Walk That Walk, though? Because I know when it got popping, but I'm talking about how long did it go from y'all doing it to it like really getting popping? And
so I had did Walk That Walk before Holly Berry, but Walk That Walk was a slower process burning. It was just like growing slow. When we did Holly Berry, that shit went instantly. Like it wasn't, so it appeared that Holly Berry because it did blow up faster. People thought it, in retrospect, a lot of people thought that came first, but it wasn't. But what happened was Holly Berry blew up fast, it moved, and Walk That Walk was slowly built. But once Walk That Walk caught up and hit, it stuck like for a long time. You know what I'm saying? So they were kind of simultaneously, but Walk That Walk was probably like, shit, almost a year before Holly Berry, about 8-9 months before Holly Berry. No, so my Holly Berry blew up in the first month, bro. Like it took no time.
But this is after Hurricane Chris get the record.
No, this was before.
This is Hurricane, what y'all do it. Yeah.
This was way before that. Hurricane Chris didn't get Holly Berry to maybe 2 years after
it I thought it had been out. Going for a minute before
yeah, it went. It was already all over Texas, Dallas. See, it started from Clean Prairie View, Dallas, Houston, and then and beyond Oklahoma, this and Kansas. It had already spread that before Hurricane. But Hurricane bought it when it was already big in that region. And then they label took it and bought it later. They bought it in like 2009. We did that song probably like in early 2008 or maybe late 2007. You get what I'm saying? So like we had that record had been out for a minute before they even came in the picture.
So okay, boom. Okay, so how does it end up going that way then? Because I remember when it happened, it was like these Texas records just popping up everywhere else, like even with the Dougie record. Like I remember the Dougie shit happened like that. Then it was like Harry Crane Chris gets the Halle Berry record. Like how these records leave in Texas? Like
so with the Halle Berry record, that was me and Superstar. Shout out to Superstar who originally had the record. You know what I'm saying? It was his record, but he was in my Primetime Click group. And you know what I'm saying?
He wrote the hook and all that.
Yeah. So he approached me to get on the record because I was the hottest thing at PV. So when I hopped on the record, it blew up in PV, blew up in Dallas. And I was doing a lot of shows by this time. So I was moving. I was in motion. So I single-handedly took it up to Dallas. And Dallas is where it blew up at and went mainstream because I took it straight to the club, to the radio. Like all in 1 month, you know what I'm saying? I went home. And I was already doing a lot of shows.
This is why you moving Walk That Walk.
Yeah, this is why I was moving Walk That Walk and mixtape shit. You know what I'm saying? Because I was known as a mixtape rapper first. So I had like that little niche. But then Walk That Walk was moving in the clubs. But then, you know, we brought Halle Berry and then we blew it up. And then it just spread like wildfire. You get what I'm saying? And then I had those two records moving at the same time.
And you independent this whole time?
Yeah, just independent. Me and my DJ, me and Merc.
How y'all making this shit happen like this?
Investing in ourselves and just really the grinding. You know what I'm saying? We was putting every dollar into mixtapes, but we was moving around heavy. Like, I was in the club, even while I was at PV, I was in the clubs from Monday to Monday, whether it was Houston or Dallas. Like, I will, you know what I'm saying, I finish my last class, we'll shoot.
You went to school at the same time?
Yeah, I was at school, you know, some days I was going to class, some days I wasn't. But I shoot to the H, and one night I hit every club that's going on in the H, you know what I'm saying? Find my way in there, go meet the DJ, lock in, let them hear the song. Once they heard the song, they could hear it, you know what I'm talking about? And just getting that motion like that in Houston and Dallas, going back and doing the same thing, and that's how we kind of got it going. We was in the clubs every night, and then when we went in the clubs, we had the mixtape going on, and then this is the rise and the beginning of Facebook and MySpace, so we killing in that area too. So we was kind of just all over the place, like we just never stopped grinding. So it was really more so about the hustle and the grind that got us in that predicament. You know what I'm saying?
How far y'all going out at that time?
How far what?
How far are y'all going out, like, with the record, like, traveling-wise, you know what I'm saying, at that time?
Dallas, Houston, and then we start hitting the small towns, like, the Tylers and the Waco's.
Just running Texas.
The Beaumont. Yeah, we just Texas right now. We just, everywhere we can go in Texas, San Antonio. It started off all Texas, and then, you know.
Was it networking through the college circuit? Like
y'all college circuit. So PV, we linked up with DJ Hella Yella. He was at HT Austin. You know, we would go to Lamar and Beaumont. You know what I'm saying? We would go to, of course, TSU, U of H when I hit there. So we was hitting all that. But we was stepping out in the clubs too. You know what I'm saying? And which is the real city of the Houston too. So, I mean, the more I think about it, we really just wasn't missing nothing. We was hitting everything. College circuit, the streets, the clubs, the internet. You know what I'm saying? We was hitting everything, like, simultaneously, you know.
So then I would imagine because y'all moving so much. Like, what happens when the labels start coming around and, like, wanting to sign and do all that?
The first people that tried to – that reached out and I was at PV was – was Rap-A-Lot, you know what I'm saying? I remember getting a call from, it was either Jazz or Jay Prince Jr., but I think it was Jazz actually that hit me, you know what I'm saying? I guess he got the number somehow, and you know, he was talking about Walk That Walk, and it was on their radar, and you know, maybe like some months later, I think we went, yeah, we went down to the campaign and rap a lot. We had a chat, then we talked with Jay Prince Sr. And we just kind of like met him, and you know what I'm saying? We didn't end up doing a deal, but that was the first part. And then it just started going from there. Like Young Jock here hit me up one time. He had the little shit going on. He tried to sign me. Then from there, it started coming to labels, you know what I'm saying? The Atlantic Universal. You know what I'm saying? I ended up doing the E1 Koch deal because they were the only label that approached me, and they was looking at me like an album artist. They knew about kind of a little bit about my mixtape grind. So
everybody else was
trying to get them singles, you know, single deals. You know, they walked their way. They were just trying to get the single deals. But like E1, Koch, aka E1, you know, approached me. You know, it was like, hey, we want to do some albums with you. You know what I'm saying? And they came with a 3-album deal. It was just a no-brainer. It was just better than, you know what I'm saying? I could have been, I tell people, you can be a bench player on a big team, on the Lakers, or you can go be a star in Cleveland, and then you can go carry that team. You get what I'm saying? That's how I looked at it. I was like, Koch is the smaller label. They really like an independent. They're a large independent. Everything else is major. Yeah, I would have got that single deal on Atlantic Universal, all that. But they, you know, I would have been just somebody on their shelf to get out. Whereas when I went to E1, I was that star player over there, the Koch, and we made everything happen over there, you know, at that time. So, you know.
So when you went over there, did you already have Ice Cream Paint Job?
Yeah, but they didn't even know about it. So it wasn't even out yet. I got signed for Walk That Walk and everything that I was doing, you know, with the hot, just
yeah, Walk That Walk movement. Was open. It was
Walk That Walk was doing this thing. Walk That Walk just kept growing, but it was slowly growing, and it just kept going. It never really hit peak. It was just, so it was the one that was getting me through all the doors. And I dropped the mixtape, and Ice Cream Paint Job was on that mixtape. That actually blew up on some random shit in the Bay Area from my MySpace page. Like the label had no idea about that record, but they were just saying like, okay, when they watched the little BDS, you got this record that's blowing up in Texas, this Walk That Walk, and it just keep getting bigger. But then all of a sudden, it's this record that pop up with your name in the Bay Area in California out of nowhere. And I had never even been at the Cali at this time, so they didn't even understand how it happened. But I had a pop in MySpace page, and a DJ that was on the radio out in Cali and a big club DJ in the Bay, he used to come to my page and just get music, and I hit that Ice Cream Paint Job on there after I dropped this mixtape, and he came and got it. He loved it. It hit that Cali feel to it. The rest was history. He took it. He literally started playing the clubs and the radio. That shit, now the only thing that ever blew up faster than Halle Berry was Ice Cream Paint Job. It blew up fast, but see, these records blew up fast. You know how people say how sometimes success can look like it's overnight? It's never that. It was, I was just in motion everywhere. Like by this time, nigga, I got mixtapes everywhere. I got a couple singles playing everywhere in the South. I'm on MySpace all over the place. So now my shit is moving like this. So is when I drop Ice Cream Paint Job, it just take out fast. To the world who didn't know me, it looked like I just came out of nowhere. They had no idea about.
You had already been building.
They had no idea about none of that. So they were just like, who, you know, and it came out of Cali. So a lot of artists didn't even know I was from Texas that was hearing it out there. So, and it just goes to show that, like, you, nothing really ever comes out the blue. It's just, you just don't see the other stuff. You feel me? Because, like I say, by the time Ice Cream Paint Job come out, I was on fire in the South. Like, literally, I was doing shows every weekend, like 4 or 5 shows from Thursday to Sunday, you know what I'm saying? Just before Ice Cream Paint Job, but I was doing them all in one region, just Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, maybe Louisiana, maybe Mississippi, just that whole little thing, but I was killing it. And then boom, out the blue, I got something blowing up in Cali, and that just connected the whole thing. And yeah, that's what really, you know, that's what really made it all come together. Yeah.
Damn. Okay. So then that record take off, and then how did shit start changing for you? Like,
so when that record started taking off, now that was a whole different thing. That's when I became like a mainstream artist. You know what I'm saying? Cause now I'm doing shows all over the country. You feel me? Like, I'm everywhere. That song blew up and it spread. Now I'm doing even bigger shows, you know, big concerts, you know, theaters, you know what I'm saying? I'm just doing everything I was doing at a higher level. And that's the main thing it changed. It just turned me, it just, the perspective was, I'm this mainstream artist now. You get what I'm saying? So that's what Ice Cream Paint Job did. where even, you know, people still looked at me like the, like a big Southern artist, underground mixtape with some club records before that. So that changed it, and then that's what got me the album deal as well. And we started, we put the album out, you know, later that year, and then that's, the album changed everything as well. So, you know, it just kept on growing. Feel me? Man,
okay, tell me this, because I'm big on, because like I was a DJ first and I got a producer and then got into all this, so I'm big on like this music, song structure, writing and shit.
Yeah,
what made you come out? Because I'm like, that opening line, bro. Yeah, buddy, wrote like a big, like that, yeah, shit is, yeah, just like one of the greatest, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Shit, I was just, man, I remember when I wrote that record, bro, like I actually had did two records to that beat, you feel me? I had came up with another record that was hard, but it wasn't as hard. But like my whole,
was a cross song too, it was something different.
Nah, it was actually like a female club like record. And it was hard, but it just, I don't know, when I finished it, I loved the beat so much, I was like, nah, I gotta come harder, I gotta come with a harder record. But what I had, you know, learned about the Dallas Boogie movement and everything that was going on at that time was, before I even had Walk That Walk and all those records, I was struggling with making singles because I was a mixtape rapper. I was just using the rapping and bars and this and that, but that wasn't getting me in the clubs and it wasn't getting me booked, but it got me a buzz. So I started like learning how to make singles. So when I would go to the club and like try and get DJs to play music, they had a short attention span. Like you had like 5 to 10 seconds to impress at this time, because you know you had Lil Will them, Lil Shine them, and it was a couple other people, Fat Pimp them, they records was already out before my Walk That Walk and shit was going, like, because I was still in that mixtape lane. But I'd be like, damn, how I'm popping like this? But then these rappers, I didn't know them at this time. Like, these motherfuckers coming with one song, and these niggas doing shows everywhere, and they shit popping. I was like, I need to learn how to make a single. Like, I need to do this. But what I learned about that time, it was like, you had to catch people's attention fast. So I started learning, like, even Walk That Walk, it starts straight out with She Can Walk, and then it dropped into the beat. Like, when we was making those records, we was thinking from a mindset, like, we got to catch everybody fast with it. Otherwise, we ain't going to even get no shot. DJ going to change our shit, or people going to stop vibing. So I automatically started approaching records like that. And then I just started perfecting that. So by the time I made Ice Cream Paint Job, I just had this method there. So that's why the open intro to Ice Cream Paint Job is just a straight punchline, like you're going right into it, you know what I'm saying? And I think I just naturally did that by this point, because every record I was creating at that time was to catch you at the beginning of the song, you know what I'm saying? So I would say that's how that manifested.
Man, hell yeah. And then you had the remix and all that shit on.
Yeah, the remix, it was a whole bunch of remixes, you know what I'm saying? Everybody was jumping on it, so you know, we ended up doing like 3 to 4 remixes. You know what I'm saying? And it just kept growing like that.
And then, man, so the Halle Berry thing, that was still going at the same time too.
Halle Berry. So by this time, Hurricane Chris and his team and camp had, you know, came and bought Halle Berry, and you know what I'm saying? They was running with it. So by this time,
did you still want to hold on to that record?
Yeah. I was telling Superstar, like, nah, bro, like, it's already big, bro, like. I don't know what made him so antsy, but he didn't see the vision I seen. And I was telling him, bro, I was like, this song, bro, we gotta do is keep it. We gonna get a deal. We was already getting offers, but he jumped on a deal with some producers named Playing Skills.
Playing Skills, yeah.
And then the song got messed up and froze, and the DJ stopped playing it, and they hit the audible. You know what I'm saying? Hit the audible, and that's why they sold it to Hurricane Chris, because Hurricane Chris at that time.
Wait, DJ stopped playing the record? They stopped playing Halle Berry?
Yeah, because see, I was the one that Halle Berry blew up in Dallas. It blew up at PV, but that was just one thing. Once we got it to Dallas, that's when it hit radio in the club. That's kind of when it went to like mainstream Texas outside of just PV. And that was all me, because I was already in motion. So all the DJs in Dallas just knew that I was the one, and they heard, like, we heard Halle Berry because the road record. He's the one that brought it to us. He was the one performing in the clubs. You know, he the one put it on radio. So when Playing Skills signed the deal, and I didn't do the deal, I didn't do the deal with Plant Skills, but he did. So they were just like, well, fuck it. We're going to take the role off the record and this, this, and that. And they did that. And we'll create a remix. And they tried to create this little remix. This is before Hurricane Chris. Actually, they threw Tum Tum on it. And then they threw Hurricane Chris on a remix. And they tried to push that record. And all the Dallas DJs, you know, at that time, they had the Definition DJs, Strong Coalition. The DJs rejected it. They was like, nah, if y'all are going to throw the role on the record, the only reason why we was playing it was because the role brought it to us. We didn't even know that we ain't going to play it. And they just completely killed the record. So Plant Skills had paperwork on the song now. And they called the audible. They was like, well, fuck it. Like, what we going to do with this record? And Hurricane Chris Kemp at the time was looking for a single for him. So they approached the Kemp and was like, hey, we got the perfect record for Hurricane Chris. It's big here and this, this, and that. All he got to do is this and that. And he sold it to them. They got it, boom. And long story short, like, I still had paperwork. We still boom. So they had kind of like illegally did this. And I mean, to this day, I end up still getting my percentages and everything afterwards. But it was so much drama around that record at that time and what was going on. I just stepped away from it because I still had Walk That Walk. And then after Walk That Walk, Ice Cream Paint Job happened. But I also had mixtapes moving around. So I was just like, man, I'm just going to focus on my solo shit. I ain't doing, you know what I'm saying? It just taught me like to focus on what I was doing. So that happened and the rest was history. You feel me?
Man, okay. Man, talk about, okay. Because then you had the second album too. You had Get Big and all that shit.
Yeah,
man. Like, that bro, you was I ain't album. Not even to bullshit you, bro. Like, I'm not just telling you because you're here. I used to, when you came out, you was one of the new artists. I was like, hey, man, this dude, DeRoe out of Dallas, man. Like, this nigga jamming. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit was super dope, bro. And at the time, so many people, like you said, they were getting even one-offs, one records. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. It was
and
about that at that
you
time.
You were sticking around.
Yeah,
you know what
I'm saying? Yeah. So, yeah, I just, man, Get Big was the second album. You know what I'm saying? And what happened was, is after that first album, I ended up dropping the Gangsta Grills with DJ Drama. Just mixtape shit, you know what I'm saying? And Get Big was on that mixtape. And like on that mixtape, that was the record that took off naturally just from the mixtape. That's when we were dropping mixtapes on Dat Piff and Live Mixtapes. And just that record was just, I mean, the mixtape was doing good, but that record was the one that was just everybody was talking about and was catching. So we ended up, it only had like a verse and a half or something on there. And then I ended up going back in and adding to the song, making it a real single. And then E1 put it out, and then that blew up, and then I did the album deal from that. So, you know, it was just a continued motion again. So it was like, it was just the second go around. It was like, okay, he coming with the mixtapes again. Now he got a single, and then that's how that happened. You feel me? So it was just like a continuous thing with that. And yeah, bro, Get Big, you know, end up doing this thing. We did the remix, big remix on that. You know, I got Diddy on there. On that remix, yeah, Diddy, Yo Gotti, you know, Bun B, you know, Drama, DJ
What's
Drama
my man,
was on
Shawty Low.
Shawty Low's on there. Shout out RIP Shawty Low, Mano, Diamond. That was a big remix, you know what I'm saying? Wiz Khalifa was on that. He wasn't in the video, but he was on the song. He couldn't make it to the video, so he never did that. But you know, everybody else was on the video.
And that was early Wiz, man. Talk about that, because you were on a lot of people early, like, even like Nipsey Hussle.
I would run into, of course, moving around in the industry and just moving around. I was traveling a lot. I would run into these people early, like Wiz, you know, random shows in the Midwest, you know what I'm saying? And
that's how you go find out, it's his kid Wiz over
here.
Yeah,
exactly. And I'm like, and then if I take a personal liking to him, like I remember when I threw Wiz on the Get Big remix, I remember meeting him backstage at a show and just like, hey, I'm on to your shit. I think you dope, fam, man. Like, he was super surprised that I even knew who he was at that time. And like, he was amped about doing the Get Big remix, you know what I'm saying? But I was on, you know, his movement and, you know what I'm saying, the cushion orange juice, all that shit. I was just like, homie, I fuck with his vibe. Like, even though it was different from what everything else was at the time and who I was working with and even a different type of feature for Get Big, I just knew homie was going to be dope, so I threw him on there, you know what I'm saying? And it was before a lot of people knew who Wiz was. Same thing with Nipsey. Like, I was on Nipsey hella early, you know what I'm saying, just because I was just always tuned in. And if I take a personal liking to you, I don't even care if the world not on you yet or if they not fucking with you. If I take a personal liking to you as an artist, I'm going to fuck with you. And that's what I did with Nipsey and Wiz, but especially Nipsey, you know what I'm saying? We got work in, you know, so...
So did you get to like kick it with him? Like, oh, it was more songs. I'm like, yeah, we did a couple records
with Nipsey.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, man. Nipsey kicked it. You know, Nipsey would come out to my birthday in Dallas. Like, you know, we done a lot. You know, kicked it, nigga. You know, I would pick Nipsey up from the airport. We would go to the mall type stuff in my city. And then, you know, we did a lot of, me and Nipsey was another, we did a lot of shows together. Like, we were just always running into each other on the road, probably more than anybody. You know what I'm saying? I brought him out on the BET Awards on my show. But we would just do a lot of college shows. All across the country, I'd go somewhere and do a show, and Nipsey would be on the bill. So it was kind of like we were just aligned, you feel me? So we kind of, every time we linked up, we just had these conversations, bro. It was just always these deep moments we would have. But then we'll get on, run into each other again. So we just kind of had this little industry / real friend bond. You know what I'm saying? It was like a combination of both. And it was just natural. We would never force. It was just, long story short, we would just always end up in the same place. And that would just make us connect and talk and do music. You know what I'm saying? You know, we did a few records. He was on one of my Ice Cream Paint Job remixes. We did a record called The Low End. We did the remix to that. We shot videos to him. So, you know, we worked whenever we could. And he was also going to be on my Texifornia single and project. That was the last thing, man, Nipsey talked about, you know what I'm saying, before the situation happened. You know what I'm saying? A month before it happened, we was in Dallas talking about, you know, the last thing he told me was to come to LA and record at his studio. He had just got his studio built. You know what I'm saying? Marathon Studio. He just got it done. He was proud of that. And he was just like, you ain't got to, shit, when you come to LA, now you got a spot to record, bro. You can just pull up here. You ain't got to pay nothing. It's your studio now. And that was the last conversation. I was like, yeah, shit, we can do this Texifornia record. We can do this. That was the conversation we had in Dallas a month before the situation happened. And, you know, actually that next month, I was actually supposed to go to LA to go record. But shit, you know, I ended up the next time I was going, it was for the funeral. You know what I'm saying? So it kind of all happened fast. But, you know, long live Nip, you know. You know, that's, at the end of the day, you know, my guy did his thing, you feel me? Mm-hmm. And that's what it was.
Man, did you have a relationship with Mo3?
Yeah, man, Mo3. Mo3, man, Mo3 got a record out, and we got two records that ain't came out yet. One of them is on my upcoming Star Baby album that's coming up in 2023. But yeah, man, Mo3 was locked in. 3 was the first Dallas rapper. You know, coming from the city and, you know, and being who I am or whatnot, it was always competition. Everybody look at, especially in Dallas, like, it was just competition with rappers. Mo3 was the first Dallas rapper to come to me and be like, you know, I want to fuck with you, Darrow. Like, you know, take pictures type shit, locking in, letting people know, like, hey, you know, it's like he really, people don't be doing that in Dallas. You know what I'm saying? That was just, so when I saw that, I was just, homie, different. And I had heard a couple of his records, but we got cool from that. And then, you know, I started showing him the ropes. I plugged him in with the studio that he ended up recording at and doing most of this stuff at. You know what I'm saying? One of his last verse, the outside verse that he did was with my engineer at the studio. I brought him to it, but he recorded a whole lot of stuff there. I linked him up with Jeff Adair, who was shooting all his videos. So I was just, that was the type of relationship we had. He was kind of like little bro, you feel me? Like, so we had a cool little relationship on that tip, you know what I'm saying? And we did music together. Like I said, we got music that's out and music that's unreleased, that's coming out. But yeah, you know, shout out to 3 too, man. So yeah, we was definitely aligned.
Yeah. Man, do you feel like you get the credit you deserve, man?
Do I feel like I get the credit I deserve? Yeah. I don't really think about it like that. I ain't the type of artist that go around looking for credit and flowers. You know, I'm gonna get mine regardless. You know, I'm gonna get mine through, you know what I'm saying, the grind and the music, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, I ain't the person that's looking around to see if motherfuckers giving me credit or flowers or not, because yeah. I know it's a marathon, like Nipsey say, like, we still in the game, you feel me? It'll be like playing a basketball game and it's third quarter or it's halftime or about to be halftime and you looking to see, you know what I'm saying, if everybody's showing you love, like, you still got to play. You still, the game ain't over yet. So that's how I look at it, like, you know, but, nah, you know, shit, man, we 2023, like, we new music, new moves, new everything, so I'm really more geared towards that part, you feel me? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is, man. Well, shit, man, I appreciate you, you know what I'm saying, stopping through, man.
100%, 100%.
Yeah, yeah,
all right. Yes, sir, you know.
Hey, man, you got something you want
to say? Nah, I mean, right. Shit, yeah, I'm tapped in with you, you know.
All right. Well, hey, man, it's Donnie's Podcast, The Row. Hey, man, we up out of here.
Yes, sir.